Hi, welcome to the show. As Keith Olbermann said on the debut of ESPN2, welcome to the end of our careers. Keith, fortunately, was mistaken about that. ESPN2 thrived as the rest of ESPN all did. We're hoping this show will thrive as well. Welcome to Others Receiving Votes on SI. We'll be available on all the places you can find podcasts, plus video on YouTube. Thank you for joining us. I will address podcast realignment in a minute with as much clarity as I can. But first, I want to talk about this podcast, and I want to introduce you to my colleagues on this show. I'm going to follow that up by asking each of them an existential question about how they got into this racket. First, I am thrilled that we have Gene Wojciechowski on board, author of books, teacher of journalism classes at his alma mater, Tennessee, a longtime staple of ESPN Game Day. You certainly remember seeing his smiling face coming to you from campus locations across the country. But before that, he was also a hell of a daily sports writer. He helped popularize the written product at ESPN with the magazine and with .com, and he worked for a lot of major daily newspapers back in the day. Rumor has it that he was also a walk-on player at Tennessee in the leather helmet era. I did actually want to call this show 6-4, which is the score of the first college football game, Rutgers against Princeton, because I believe Gene covered that game. Gino, welcome to the show. Please tell me what drew you to this stupid sport and why you love it.
Well, first of all, fellas, before we begin, I know we're kind of a refurbished podcast here, but I figure if Auburn can do it, we can do it. I'd like to announce for everyone that we have won 7 national championships as a podcast. So congratulations to the both of you on that. I was not raised in a college football family. We didn't follow a team. My dad was a career Air Force, so we lived on a series of Air Force bases in really small towns throughout the country. And it really wasn't until I went to school at Tennessee that I understood the enormity of what college football is. And I was hooked immediately. Pat, Brian, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I love the history of it. I love the tradition of it. I love the absurdity of it. I love the resiliency of it. I love the big names and the big personalities. I mean, you know, Pat, you can identify with this. I asked Dabo Swinney a question about 2 years ago, and he's still answering it. I just love everything about it. I love that it just feels different, and it's on a campus, and that the fans never leave the game. So that's what keeps me coming back to it.
It's beautiful. Well, I'm glad you're coming back to be on our show, Gene. Thank you. Next up, Brian Fisher, my college sports coverage colleague at SI. Like Gene O'Brien, has been around the block. He has seen a lot of things. He's covered a lot of things. He's worked at Fox Sports, NBC, CBS, among other stops. And Brian, unlike Gene, did grow up steeped in football. He grew up in Texas, deep in the heart of football country. High school, college, and alas, I'm afraid he is also a Dallas Cowboys fan, but we won't throw him off the show just yet because of that. He's also a USC alum. Brian, same question for you. What drew you to this super stupid sport, and why do you love it?
Well, as you kind of alluded to, Pat, I was kind of born into it. I mean, you grew up in the state of Texas. There's no escaping football, whether it's on Tuesday or Wednesday night for some of the middle school games. You got certainly Thursday and Friday night going to JV varsity. You got Saturdays, of course, for college football. And then, as you mentioned, which very good nostalgia play in terms of growing up in Dallas in the 80s and 90s, having this Netflix documentary over the Cowboys. Yeah. It was, it was any day of the week. What was a football day there for a lot of us there in the state of Texas. And so the thing about college football that always drew me to it over kind of the pro and even a little bit of the high school was honestly just not only the pageantry, but you were going to see something in every single game that you never seen before. Like that is the great thing about watching a lot of 18 to 24 year olds, especially when it's a tight game and they're trying to close things out, fumbles, crazy plays. Like there's nothing about college sports that is predictable, given the cohort that we are watching. And that to me was always the drawing factor. And, you know, growing up in Texas and going to games at the Alamo Dome or going to games at College Station or Austin or certainly the Cotton Bowl, you know, right in my backyard. I mean, there was nothing better than walking through the state fair and going to the Red River game and just soaking that in. And even though I was pretty much the neutral in all of our parties, it was always special to soak up that atmosphere. And it's great to get across the country to see these regions of college football that are different and unique, but at the same time playing the same sport. It is a special thing, and that's why it's so fun entering now. I guess you're 16 covering this sport nationally. It's crazy to think about some of the things you get to see, but I'm enjoying it, and I can't wait to cover it a little bit here on the podcast with you guys.
Excellent. Yes, we're happy to have you. And you're 16. That makes you the youth movement here. So
I'm definitely bringing down the average age here. So
we need that. Watch it. Thank you. Defossilize us a little bit. For me, it started with the 1970 Cotton Bowl, and it's frankly never stopped. So what got me then, my oldest brother is 12 years older now, was looking at colleges, and he wanted to go to Notre Dame. So we started watching Notre Dame football games, and remember watching that game, and I remember, like, the family, I was the youngest, being excited because Notre Dame was winning, and then being sad because Texas won, because James Street did what he did back then, which was find ways to pull out victories. But I was transfixed by the helmets and the uniforms and the formations and the marching bands, just the razzmatazz, all of the the sensory bombardment that goes with football. And I loved that, and it became something that I just was a daily habit of mine. I would open the Colorado Springs Sun, the competitor to Gene Wojciechowski's Denver Post, if you will, back in the days. And the Tom Harmon football forecast was there, and they predicted every single game. And so I would take that page of the sports section with me to school and pull out a notebook paper when I was supposed to be listening to the teacher and predict the games all myself. And I did it every single week and kept track of how many I got right and got wrong. And, fortunately, I found a way to turn that into a career. And so here we are, you know, many, many years later, and I still absolutely love it. And for all the reasons you guys mentioned, you know, the compelling characters, the drama of the games, the mistakes of the games, the stupidity that happens off the field, which it's amazing to me how college football still is always able to overcome everything that the leaders of it try to do to sabotage it. But it's a beautiful thing, and I'm looking forward to spending this year with you guys talking about it. Now I'm going to address podcast realignment real quickly here. We owe something to the loyal listeners of the previous podcast that I was on, who have peppered me with questions every single day through the spring and the summer. What's up with the pod? When's the pod coming back? What's going on? We love the fact that you guys listened and were as involved as you were, and I hope you listen to this show and give it a chance as well. First things first, this podcast was always going to happen in 2025. SI wanted to expand its audio and video table, and so this was part of that, and I was going to do another podcast plus this podcast maybe if it all worked out, but this was going to be something that was going to happen all along. Yahoo Sports Podcast is in great hands. My colleague there, Ross Dellinger, and Andy Staples, two talented guys, longtime friends. They will continue to do a great job there. I was offered a very nice offer to go and do that with them and return to writing for Yahoo. But Sports Illustrated has been a place I've loved to work, and they gave me many good reasons to stay. So I'm really pleased to keep going with SI, while Yahoo does its thing, and they'll do it well. As for the other guy, most of you know as Dan Wetzel, is at ESPN. This is going to be my first football season since 2010, not working with Dan. Sad about that, but happy for him and what he's able to do there. He is not the Yoko Ono in this situation, although I did laugh when people called him that for breaking up the band. And I think all mockery that Dan gets, he deserves. But did his best to try to maintain a podcast relationship. He and I both worked very hard to try to figure out a way to keep a podcast going. As of now, it's not happening. We'll see. But the shepherd had good intentions of not leaving the flock, but the business of shepherding has gotten complicated. So that's business for you. And now we're going to have a bunch of good podcasts for people to listen to. So stay tuned with us as we try to get this Exxon Valdez of a College Football podcast steered in the right direction and off the rocks and going. So first thing we are going to do now, getting on to business, we are going to get after some people. We got some sound to play here. Kent, can you roll the sound?
I'm going f***ing in. Is that clear? If you guys want to go half speed, let me know now. You're wasting my time. Get your asses going.
You might recognize that voice. That's Brian Kelly, our favorite purple-faced ranter, LSU coach. And that's a clip from the Netflix series Any Given Saturday on the SEC. It's good, compelling video if you want to check it out. But in kinship with BK, we're going to get after some people here every week. So let's go. Gino, who are you ranting at today?
Well, there's so much to choose from. I mean, we could go Michigan NCAA. That would be fun, of course. Or I could really mock Oklahoma for charging fans access, charging them up to, what, $600, $700 for access to a post-game presser. Believe me, you're overpaying. But I guess I'd like to start off the season, Pat, Brian, just like a preemptive rant about critics of the CFP selection committee. We heard it over the summer. We heard ADs. We heard coaches ripping the whole concept of the selection committee, how they're biased, how they're brand biased, how they don't really have a protocol that they follow when determining who gets in and who's out. I am very pro committee. I remember the former systems. So I'm good with what we have. Is it a perfect system? Is the committee perfect? No. But the committee is the one entity, as opposed to the ADs or the coaches. The committee doesn't have an agenda. They're simply trying to pick the best teams, and then they're trying to seed them the correct way. And I would argue, guys, that they get it right almost, well, I think every year they've gotten it right. Maybe you could have tweaked it one way or the other. But certainly I would challenge anybody to tell me what they got wrong last year, despite all the controversy. I think it's a committee that has a lot of integrity, credibility. We know some of those people that are on that committee. They love football. They know football. They're experienced. They're knowledgeable. They care about football, and they don't have an agenda. So I would just ask everybody, just back off. Let them do their job. And if they screw up at the end of the year, sure, they're fair game. But right now, I think they've done a credible job, and I don't think they deserve the criticism that they get.
Amen, Gino. I have been perplexed, angered, mystified at the way they've been scapegoated, basically, as conferences try to maneuver a more favorable position for themselves, namely, of course, the SEC and the Big Ten. And I'm concerned, even with still having a committee this year, that the forces at work there are going to try to intimidate them and or shoehorn them analytically into doing what they want. I mean, We've got changes in the upcoming season to enhance the tools the selection committee uses. Current strength of schedule metric has been adjusted to apply greater weight to games against strong opponents. An additional metric, record strength, has been added to the selection committee's analysis to go beyond a team's schedule strength to assess how a team performed against that schedule. Somebody has to explain these metrics to me. What are they, and why do we need to change them? Unless we're just tired of listening to the SEC complain that their strength schedule is so hard that going 8-4 is perfectly acceptable when other teams are going 10-2. So I am with you. Look, you can't formula this. You have to have some human element of decision-making and discernment. And I'm worried that we're going to eliminate that, or at least lessen that to the point where this is going to be a different exercise. So, all right, that's me ranting on your rant. Brian, what do you got?
Oh, you know, I could probably continue this rant just a little bit. I mean, I do challenge anybody to get up at about 2 a.m. on every Sunday after Saturday of college football and go ahead and rank your top 25 teams. And you just see how hard and slash easy you think it is. So I will throw that out there. But I am actually ranting against Deshaun Foster, the UCLA head coach. He cut off media access at practice this week from his players, from the media actually attending practice. And he says he wants to avoid giving opponents an edge. And I cannot believe we are in 2025 right now. My eyes are rolling so far back into my head that we are still having college head coaches do this again. Nobody has ever gained an advantage or a disadvantage from somebody from media members watching a practice. Nobody has won a game. Nobody has lost a game. And this goes for you across town too, Lincoln Riley. You know, you're kind of in the same boat given the restrictions that you've placed on some of the media members there at practice at USC. But I just don't get this. You can go across town to where the Rams are practicing, and there will be 50 media members with their cameras pointed at whatever, and you don't see them freaking out about media members interviewing players. You don't see any of that happening down there at Chargers practice. Like, this is crazy that we are in this media environment and somebody still wants to restrict practice. And you know, Deshaun also mentioned, you know, I don't care about marketing the program. Like, this is insane to me, number one, given the market. I know, Deshaun, you know you're in L.A., We established that last year at Big Ten Media Days that, you know, you're in L.A. You got two NFL teams. You got Luka and LeBron. You got the Dodgers. You got a rival that's been a lot better for you than the last 20 years. You better be worried about marketing your players. And look, there were 35,000 people in that Rose Bowl that seats about 2.5 times that for your last home game last year. You better worry about marketing, especially in this day and age of NIL, of you know, getting out there. You're on Big Ten Network, you're on CBS, you're on these big time platforms. You better worry about marketing your players, marketing your program, because guess what? Rivals are going to start using that against you. So I just, it's crazy to think that we're still the college coaches that are so much of a control freak are still doing this in 2025. It blows my mind. And, you know, it was funny starting out my career covering across town with Pete Carroll with 3,000 or 4,000 fans every single practice, and they still won national titles. I think it's okay to open things up, and you want to restrict, you know, filming to those first 15 minutes of practice where guys are just stretching or doing special teams. Fine. But to cut off completely, that is crazy to me in this day and age. And so I will stop ranting there.
I thought it was a parody account when I saw the tweet. I thought it was a joke. Like, UCLA, they should be begging that everyone comes out there. If I were the sports editors of those newspapers or the program directors at those local stations, I'd give him exactly what he wants. I wouldn't show up. And then you'll see what it's really like to be ignored. It's just, it's absurd. It's mind numbing that he thinks that way. That's a great point by you, Brian.
It is. I mean, like, you're the number 8 option, maybe. 9, 10 in LA.
That might be pushing it as a longtime LA resident. That might be pushing it.
Yeah. I mean, for them to say, no, we're getting too much attention here is fantastic. So good luck then with that. And I'm glad you brought up the Pete Carroll era when practices were wide open to everybody, and gee, how did that go? They won championships. It turned out okay. All right, my rant, Gino touched on it, actually. Oklahoma selling tickets to press conferences. Look, we know times are tough in college athletics. We know people are looking to scrape up dollars everywhere they can, and apparently they're going to get them. $692.11 for 2 seats at the Michigan post-game press conference, $576.86 for the SEC opener after the Auburn game. I don't know where they come up with the 11 cents and the 86 cents there, but
you know,
yeah, it's a nice touch. But I'm not going to sit here and tell people how to waste their money, but oh my goodness, you're wasting your money. Let me tell you, first of all, how the Michigan thing's going to unfold. That kickoff, I believe, is 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central. So 6:30 Norman time. It won't be. It'll be 6:45. It'll be 15 minutes later. The game will end at roughly, you know, give 3 hours and 15 minutes. So let's say it's going to end at 10 o'clock. And if Brent Venables is anything like Dabo Swinney, who Gino mentioned, He's not showing up at the podium for 45 minutes to an hour after that game. So now we're talking 11 o'clock, and you're going to wait around after that. If your team has won, you're going to be like, hey, let's go celebrate. Or if you've lost, like, oh, let's get out of here. Let's get out of town. Let's go back to Oklahoma City or Enid or wherever the heck you're from. But no, if you're going to stick around for that, and then here's going to be the questions and answers. Coach, how do you think John Mateer looked today? Well, John did some good things. Did some good things. Got some things we got to clean up. You know, we'll look at the tape tomorrow, and we'll figure that out. Coach, how about the defense? Defense was great. You know, really kept us in the game. You know, got some things we need to clean up there too as well. But you know, we'll look at that. Coach, blocking, offensive line. You know, strong in some areas. Struggled a little bit in pass protection, but you know, work in progress. And that's what you're going to get. Congratulations for your $700. It's not that exciting. I promise you. I promise. I wish our jobs were more exciting, but they're not. So good luck to those folks that are going to spend $700 to watch a post-game press conference at 11 p.m. after the excitement is worn off of the game. And that's actually when we go to work. All right. That's our rants for the week, although there's probably going to be some more ranting coming up here because we get into some other topics, starting with this one. Oh, boy. The Big Ten has proposed a 28-team playoff. And this is like, first it was 16, and it's like we're doubling down on bad. We're taking a bad idea. We're going to see exactly how much worse we can get with it. And so Tony Petitti and his conference have talked to people internally and externally about maybe expanding to 28. Gentlemen, I know how I feel about this. Let me hear from you. Brian, your thoughts.
Again, going back to my earlier point, have you tried to rank teams on a Saturday of trying to split, you know, kind of split the baby, if you will, in terms of like who is better, Iowa or Illinois, when they've both played a, you know, field goal game or that it has come down to the wire? Like, the thing about this, it doesn't feel like anybody is at all connected to the sport of college football when you're suggesting these. Like, it's one of those brainstorm ideas that you get if the college kids were, maybe it's a Friday night, they've had a few of your favorite beverage, and they're suggesting, like, wouldn't it be cool? Like, this might be straight out of the mind of Mike Leach almost. Like, yeah, let's go bigger. Let's go bigger. Let's do it. Like, I cannot fathom it. I definitely understand why this proposal was leaked as quickly as it was. And the reaction has been probably pretty predictable in terms of everything. But I think this just reconfirms that we are probably going to be sticking around with 12 teams this season moving forward, because nobody wants this. I have yet to meet a true stakeholder that wants that Iowa team out there that is 7-4, that is like closing in. And this does not enhance the regular season one iota. Like, that to me is the thing that everybody keeps saying, oh, this will be great, we'll have better non-conference games. No, it doesn't matter. If those games don't matter, then this proposal doesn't matter. So, like, get off of this. Let's go back to 12. Let's reboot the system, if you will. And for Tony Petitti, like, this is actually making him look worse than he did a month ago at Big Ten Media Days when he got up there and started insisting on saying, hey, no, this proposal is what's good for college football, because it is not anywhere near good enough for college football.
So you think it was leaked to squash it, basically?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I have no doubt about that. And you know, frankly, that's good. Like, go ahead. If you have a stupid idea, go ahead and put it out there and see what the reaction is. And this trial balloon has not gone the way of the Big Ten. And I don't think anybody is excited to see this idea circulate some more at this point.
Gino, you fired up for the great 28?
I don't know if it was leaked to squash it. I wonder if it was leaked to just get a feel for how people would react, and they can find something a little less than 28. Maybe it's just a starting point, but we talked about why we love college football, or what is it about this that attracted us to this sport to begin with. I don't want to cover the NFL junior. I like college football like it is. I like that the regular season really means something. And you can try to argue yourself out of a bag and try to convince me that this will enhance the regular season. But I just keep on thinking of NCAA basketball and how when that tournament keeps on growing, the regular season keeps on shrinking in importance. So I don't buy it. And then I guess the other thing I would ask Has anyone asked the players how they feel about this? Do they want to do this? Because guess what? They actually have some power now. So you better get some sort of consensus from the players on this, because guess what? We have seen them start to wield power, and now they have the power of money behind them. And if they don't sign off on this, you can do all you want as far as 28 team and 24 team or 16 teams. But if they're not on board, then this doesn't happen. I think Brian's right. I think 12 is the number we're going to stay at. I'd be really surprised if it changes.
Yeah, I agree. And you're right about the players, where you want to give them extra incentive to unionize or to push for a different sort of power structure. Well, this might be a way to do it, by just blowing this thing up to 28 without even getting any input from them.
Right.
So I look at this and like the only thing you can compare it to that we actually have is the 24 team FCS playoff. I don't hear anybody saying, man, that is so great, we need to copy that and bring that to the FBS. They do it for a reason, right? Okay, they want a big national playoff. They don't have bowl games, so they want more people involved in the postseason, and they want to try to make money off of those games. I get it. That's fine. But here's what else happens in the FCS playoffs. Nobody goes. Look at attendance. I did. It plummets for schools even that bring in good fan bases. Nobody goes to the games. 15 out of the 16 schools that hosted games last year saw attendance decrease. The one that went up by 19. 19 fans more showed up than the average during the season. Most of them dropped over 40%. So it's not like this is some galvanizing idea that you're taking from FCS and going to apply it to FBS. Otherwise, I agree. I think this is a naked money grab by Tony Petitti, who I wrote in July is a bit desperate to deliver something to Fox, the TV partner, and to his league that I think he promised them, like, look, yeah, we're going to get these automatic bids. We're going to get these conference play-in games. We're going to be making more money. And right now it's not happening, at least not the way they want. So the push and pull there is interesting, and I think it's leading him to trying some crazy things. Next topic. This is going to be near and dear, certainly, to Gene Wojciechowski's heart, and really to all of us, I think. Lee Corso, as most everybody knows, is going to do his last college game day, week one, Horseshoe, Texas, Ohio State. Gino, how many years did you work on the game day set?
11 years.
11 years. And, yeah, of course, knew him well before then. I did, too. I worked a couple of years with game day. And he's just been such a cherished figure in college football, and is really – he elevated that show, but just elevated the Saturday experience, I think, so much. The show did, and him in particular. Gene, I want to know, what was it like working with Coach Corso? What are the emotions going to be like watching him sign off?
Yeah, bittersweet. Bittersweet. I mean, we talk about Mount Rushmores all the time. I think it's Grantland Rice. I think it's Keith Jackson. I think it's Kirk Herbstreit. And I think it's LC. I just think he's one of the all-time greats. He's meant so much to college football. And he redefined really the way that we entertain in a pregame show when it comes to college football. But what I'll always love about Coach Corso was his kindness. I was a nobody on that show, but I might get a call in the middle of the week from Coach Corso just saying, hey, you did a really nice job on that story, you and your producers. And that, golly, that was really good. And it might be a 30-second call, but it meant everything. Or he would come over before a show and just kind of, you know, wink and give you a handshake, which, by the way, would crush every bone in your hand. And I always loved going out there and being on the set when the show first started. And I loved watching the relationship between Kirk and Lee, because early in Kirk's career, Lee was the one who sort of held Kirk's hand. And later in Lee's career, it's Kirk that's sort of holding Coach's hand. And it's a beautiful, real, authentic relationship between the two of them. And then finally, I would just say that, you know, we use the word courage a lot in sports. You know, wow, what a courageous downhill 7-foot putt that was. No, that's not courage. Courage is doing what Lee Corso did, which was have a significant medical event, a stroke, and then coming back and being on the most unforgiving medium in the world, live television, and getting back there and doing it and having the courage to do it. And I have just so much respect for that guy. And before a show would begin, fellas, you could hear Coach Corso down a hallway or an adjoining room, kind of like getting his voice ready, you know, getting his throat ready. He had rested up the night before. He had done all of his homework. It meant so much to him. And he wanted to be the true professional. And that never went away. So I respect that guy 1,000 different ways. You know, like a lot of people, I'm sure I'm going to, you know, it's going to get dusty wherever I am watching that final show with Coach.
Yeah, no doubt. Well said. Brian, your thoughts on Lee Corso's run, and you'll be there to see the last show.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Gino kind of mentioned it a little bit, just the how nice Lee is. You know, I first met him probably back in 08, I would say, just was back, you know, in the back of the room watching game day, you know, happen, you know, for one of the shows and being basically a PA and the warmth that you got from Lee, you know, to everybody in that room, you know, on a constant basis, definitely stuck out in my mind. And I think he's honestly kind of been the soul of college football. You know, everybody, you know, any segment that you would have on issues off the field related to the playoff, whatever it might be, that was kind of about the sport itself. You know, there would be great points, you know, around the desk with, you know, Kirk and Dez and all those guys. But, you know, it would go over to Lee, and maybe in one line or two, he would sum up why this was good or bad for the game. And yep. That was and he was always spot on. You know, that to me was the thing that he understood college football from both a granular level as a head coach in terms of those X's and O's, but he also understood the bigger picture about the sport. And that to me is frankly what we're going to be losing, you know, come next Saturday when he's there at the Horseshoe and he puts on that final head. I mean, everybody looked forward to that. Everybody anticipated that. But to me, the thing that we are really losing beyond the entertainment factor with Lee is honestly just he understood that we got to protect this game and we got to protect it from some of the things that have been happening to it. It is getting away to the sport that a lot of us grew up watching, a lot of us grew up covering. And that to me is the thing that I think we will miss most of all with him retiring from the show is just he could sum things up in one sentence and you just started nodding. And that thing that to me is Lee Corso. He understood college football and he really was kind of the soul of the sport.
Yeah. Just so many good points there from both of you all. I just, having again worked on the show and what Gene said, he has a nice personal touch about him. He's a big deal. He was the biggest deal on the show for a long time, but he would, you know, have something nice to say to everybody that was working on the show and treat everybody well. And the relationship between he and Kirk is genuine and quite touching. I agree. And I got to give credit to ESPN for the way it has taken care of Lee to a degree after his stroke and kept him on the show and kept Dick Vitale through his medical issues. These are the two people that did as much as anybody to make ESPN what it is. And the network hasn't forgotten them and has kind of shepherded them through. And I think it's been fantastic. So hats off to Lee Corso. I hope he has a wonderful retirement, but we will miss seeing him grab that headgear. Next topic. All right. SI, we put out 8 different brackets. Everybody loves brackets. We don't love a 2018 bracket. But we put out a lot of 12-team brackets and one 16-team bracket in our preview edition and in the magazine. Yes, there's still a magazine. Buy the magazine. Keep us employed, please. All kinds of brackets from what we think may actually happen this season on down the line through some really silly stuff. But my favorite one in the silly stuff was the drunkest fan base bracket. I believe we had to term that a little bit more politely, something like most spirited tailgate atmosphere. But let's be real, it was actually drunkest fan base bracket. LSU won over Wisconsin, but you can see the whole thing online now, si.com. Gene, this makes me want to ask you, again, going back to your game day experiences, where you have to stand on a set with thousands of blotto people around you, what was the frothiest crowd you have encountered at 9 a.m.?
It was actually 6 a.m. with the time difference. Washington State, Pullman had been waiting for years and years and years for game day to come to come there. And it was extraordinary. I mean, remember, you know, the show starts at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. I mean, it was pitch black, and those people had been there for hours and hours, and it was incredible. I mean, James Madison was amazing. Fargo was nuts. Beale Street for Memphis was bonkers. But in my mind, nothing matched the enthusiasm level at Wazoo. I loved it, and I thought it was incredible. I did, and I loved your all's brackets, by the way. I immediately ruled out Michigan State because I got my car keyed there. That cost me like $2,000 to get my car repainted. So Michigan State, you're dead to me. And I would just add, and I know it's only one game, okay, but I was a little surprised not to see Army/Navy in that bracket, because if you've ever been to that game, I mean, you know, they got tanks there. You know, they got generals and admirals and soldiers and all sorts of guns that I would never want to be on the working end of. It's an incredible environment. Donkeys and goats. I might have put that in your bracket someplace, but otherwise, very clever and ingenious by you guys.
Yeah, I have to say, the Palouse, they do get after it.
And they do, man.
The ones that you named, are all places where, you know, game day comes once. It's not, you know, fine. They get after it in Columbus and Ann Arbor and Norman and Tuscaloosa too, but they're used to it there. And so those places when game day shows up one time, it is a big old deal. Brian, brackets that we did, what'd you like? What was your favorite one?
Well, you mentioned the LSU one. I mean, I think everybody understands that a night game at Tiger Stadium, the air is there's a hint of bourbon, if not a few other flavors that you can probably get a contact high as well. I mean, like that to me is the other thing. I was at the LSU Alabama game last year, and obviously Alabama just crushed LSU and sent them streaming from the X. So actually, after the game, might have been where those fans probably earned that keep a little bit more. But I love the brackets because it was a chance to explore, like Jana mentioned, like putting Navy in there. Like if Blake Horvath goes off and you get Navy as a surprise group of five team, what the impact of that was, you know, Tulane thrown in there. So like it was a fun exercise for me just to kind of imagine things. I mean, in what world does Texas A&M actually live up to expectations and win a national title? Like we had them in one of those brackets. So it's been fun. It was definitely I was a little skeptical, you know, when the bosses first kind of present us this idea of like, here's how we're going to do our preview this year. But it was kind of fun to go through it and see the potential options. And I think, Pat, you mentioned it. I think we had what a third of the FBS that ended up making some form of one of those brackets.
Yeah, we name checked 45 programs in there. So it's we covered a lot of ground. Be sure to check them out, si.com, and register your outrage with us accordingly.
Well, hey, Pat, can I interrupt you for one second? And maybe you'll remember this. Back in the day, we would have these computers where this is going to boggle people's minds who are, you know, 20, 25, 30, 35. But we used to have to put the phones into couplers on our computers and send our stories. And it was so loud at LSU one time, it kept on interrupting the signal. I literally had to lay on top of my computer on the floor at the LSU press box to basically muffle the sound of the LSU crowd and band after the game. And going down the stands afterwards, I almost killed myself about 20 different times stepping on bourbon bottles on those stands. So there is no place like LSU on a night game.
There
not
is
even
not
close.
No, it is truly its own creation and its own level of intensity and noise, as you said. That's so, yeah, the old, what were the acoustic couplers, the either the Trash 80, the Radio Shack, or before that, the Porta Bubble.
Yes.
Remember where, you literally stuck a phone into these things and it transmitted your story by bits into some computer. Man, we have come a long way since then, and I'm glad that we have. Good Lord. All right, this is preseason, right? So what do we have to do? We've got to make predictions, and we're going to try to get those out of the way this week because we want to talk more about the games next week because we got just a bonkers first week. So we're going to get some of our season predictions out of the way here, kind of a rapid fire round if we can. We're going to start with this. First coach fired and when? Gene, do you got one?
He's already been fired. Or he's already been dismissed. Frank Reich at Stanford. We know he's a one and done. All right, fair enough. I would suggest if I were Hugh Freeze at Auburn, I would get off to a very quick start this season because on October 4th, that's a bye week. And if it doesn't go well at Auburn, who knows what they might do during that bye week.
Brian.
Well, I would echo the Hugh Freeze sentiment. I mean, you mentioned the press conferences earlier and selling the access to the fans. There might be some Auburn fans if that game at Oklahoma that might want to get into that press conference and shout a few things at Hugh. The thing is, like, it is different nowadays firing a guy midseason because of the portal and that whole aspect. Like, you know, ADs are a little bit more conscious of keeping a guy around, but also conducting their search behind the scenes. There's going to be a lot more of that this year, especially given the turnover that we're going to see in the SEC. I throw out Arkansas. Obviously, everybody knows the Bobby Petrino factor there with Sam Pittman. I think that is a very real thing there in terms of guys wanting and boosters especially wanting to see what Bobby can maybe do with this team down the stretch if certainly Sam Pittman dips below 500 and his buyout is manageable. But I will throw Brent Pry out there as a potential under the radar guy to get fired and get the early trigger. Starts with South Carolina on a Sunday, so all eyes will be on that game in Atlanta. Then Vandy, Old Dominion at home. We know what happens when Virginia Tech loses to Old Dominion at home. Typically, that puts you right firmly on the hot seat. So, Whit Babcock, we already know the money troubles. He's asking. He's trying to pass the hat around there in Blacksburg for more money for the program. So, this could be a potential issue if Brent Pry gets off to a slow start there.
All right, we covered some pretty good ground there. I'll throw in one more Brent Brennan at Arizona. Mm. Barely made it out of last year.
Yeah,
and I think there will be a short leash from Desiree Reed-Francois, the athletic director there this season. As Brian noted, early firings aren't as much in vogue because you're trying to keep your roster together, but that doesn't mean that movements aren't underway to get in different coaches. All right, the top 25s are out, and as always, somebody's going to flop who's in the top 10. We don't know who, but we're going to try to guess. Gene, do you have a guess? Do you have a top 25 team that you think is not going to have as good a season as they're currently billed to have?
I'm going to argue none of the top 10 teams are going to flop. I just don't see it. Maybe I'll be wrong, but I would take the elevator three flights down to where South Carolina is at number 13, and I would argue that South Carolina is going to have a difficult time matching or exceeding the 9 wins that it had last season, and they have that brutal stretch. Let's see, they're at LSU, they play OU, Bama, at Ole Miss, they get a bye week, and then they're at A&M. Yes, I know, they have a great quarterback, and or a kid who looks like he can be a great quarterback, but they lost some guys at a key spot on that team, the defensive line, and I think they'll scuffle. Not because Shane Beamer isn't a good coach. He is. Everyone likes him. We like his program. I just think it's going to be tougher for them this year.
I think that's a good call. Lenora Sellers is fantastic. I just think they lost a lot around him. And as you noted, the schedule is brutal. Yeah. Brian, who do you have?
That is definitely a good shot with Gamecocks. And it seems like typically when they have a good season, they follow it up by a down year and then they have another good season and it's kind of, you know, yo-yos back and forth. So South Carolina, definitely a good shout, especially against that schedule. I'll go with the team right ahead of them if we're allowed to cheat on the question a little bit with Illinois. I mean, you know, look, they won so many close games last year, and yes, they have probably more starters returning than just about all but maybe one or two teams in the country at this point. But that game against Duke early in the season, that is a tricky one, you know, especially with Duke upgrading a quarterback. I think that could be a tricky one. They play Indiana early in the season. Like, you could be talking about maybe even a 2-2 start there for the Illini. I do think that Brett Bielema has the program pointing in the right direction, but Illinois fans are going to be kind of in the same boat, you know, bracing almost for the regression from this team, given how many close games they played. I mean, you know, trying to pull out games against Purdue last year, you're like, you won it, sure. But at the end of the day, maybe that doesn't really make Illinois that type of team to really contend for the college football playoff moving forward. But that would probably be my one to circle, especially given that some of those games at the end of the year. You know what? Maybe a Wisconsin team fighting for a bowl game, that they might be a little bit tougher for the Illini to play down the stretch this year.
You know, I got to talk to my producer, Kent, here. We're not coachable. We are not coachable. I say top 10. I get 12 and 13 here. So this is what I'm dealing with. I'm going to give you a top 10 team.
All right.
I'm going to give you Oregon at number 7. And I love Dan Lanning, and I think he's got the program obviously operating on a high level. I just think they're due for a little regression. Not sure about the quarterback situation. Had a key injury at wide receiver. And we'll see. The schedule is tricky. I mean, Montana State, the opener, everybody's going to say, that's going to be 56-10. Maybe it will be. But Montana State went to the FCS championship last year, is ranked number 2 in FCS this year. They got to be ready right away. But they're at Penn State. Indiana is going to be good again, I promise you. At Iowa, USC is going to be better. They close at Washington. I think there's just some chances to trip up there where this is going to be a little more difficult this time around. All right, let's go unranked team that you believe will soar into contention. Who do we got from outside the top 25?
Well, I'll go first. It's a coin flip for me between Utah and USC. And I'm going to go with USC, partly, fellas, because I don't think Lincoln Riley has forgotten how to coach. I think the defense will be better. I don't think you look at their schedule, they don't have Penn State, they don't have Ohio State, they get Michigan at home. I just think it's time. I just cannot simply believe that program and that head coach have been as mediocre or bad as they've been. I just think this is the year that they start to truly put it together.
We'll see, because right. USC is definitely contending more for 2026 than they are to 2025. But I'll take the flip side of that coin and go with Utah. You know, I think the Utes, we know they're going to be good on defense. And look, Kyle Whittingham has that unit playing well. We know they're going to reload up front. That's probably the biggest question mark in terms of kind of where those spots are that they need guys to step up. It's probably going to be up front. Well, we know there's always some defensive linemen that they kind of shake loose for a tree there in Salt Lake City. So I would go with Utah, just, you know, having a new offense coming in. You know, Devin Dampier, the reports there at a camp are you know, he's performing as expected. I just think they played, but you know, with one arm tied behind their back last season for so often, like every single game. I mean, when you're down to your fifth string walk-on quarterback, like you're not going to win a whole lot of games, and to even win as many as they did, I think was probably a testament to some of the coaching abilities on that staff, especially defensively. So I will go with the Utes. Yes, we know every game in the Big 12 itself is a bit of a coin flip, but I think that is his team. Everybody thought they were going to contend for the conference last year. Maybe it's this year that ultimately that ends up coming to fruition.
It's hard to see Kyle Whittingham having another really disappointing season. So I like both you guys' selections there. I'm going to go largely schedule related with my pick and take Missouri.
Bias. We're gonna put a bias one out there right there.
Trust me, I have Gunner. It's my alma mater. I have killed them as much as any alum ever has, so I will stand on that.
And they gave you an award last year, too, you know?
Yeah, true. But that just happened. That's incidental contact. This is schedule-related. 6 straight home games to start. I feel badly, actually, for the student body. They're going to be exhausted from 6 straight home parties by the time that's over. But they easily should be 3-0 when they play South Carolina at home. I think they can win that game. You're 4-0. You play UMass. You're 5-0 when Alabama is coming to town. Win that, things are looking really promising. So there's some difficult games in the back half of the schedule, but you don't play Georgia. You don't play Texas. I'm going to say Missouri ends up certainly in the top 25. We will see how high.
They don't play the away game until March, Pat.
Basically.
Amazing.
I'm surprised that you didn't go right there in your backyard with Louisville. Like that would have been another team that I think you could probably say fits the criteria. Number one, playing in the ACC. Yes, they got to play Miami. You got SMU at the end of the year. But if you're going to play the schedule game, you probably only got three really, truly tough games there for Louisville. Like 8-4 might be the floor. And that probably gets you in the top 25 by the end of the year if you're the Cardinals.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they're worse than 9-3. So I'm looking forward to seeing them play. I think they're going to score a lot of points. All right, let's go real quick here. Give me the conference champion and the surprise team in each of the Power Four conferences. We're going to start with the ACC. Brian, what do you got?
I'm going to go with Clemson. Winners 8 of the last 10 years. Yes, they lucked into the title last season with that walk-off field goal. But with what they got coming back, I mean, you're talking about 4 to 5 first round NFL talents. If you're believing the scouts at this point, veteran quarterback, I think they're going to have a significant upgrade there. Tom Allen coordinated in the defense. And so I think that covers up a lot of holes. If they get that game there in the opener, which you'll be at, Pat, in terms of beating LSU, you're talking about maybe running the table because they will be favored the rest of the way, just given the way that ACC schedule sets up. And I think there's the easy choice there in Clemson, and there's probably nobody else that really comes close unless you're a real, real true believer there in Miami.
Surprise team?
I'll go with Louisville. Like I was saying, I think Miller Moss, I think Jeff Brohm can get him playing well. And like you said, they're going to put up a lot of points. I think everybody says, look, who could be that other team that ends up making it to Charlotte? If they beat Miami, like that is a big head-to-head tiebreaker that they could have over the Canes there. And so I'll go with Louisville.
Gene, ACC, winner and surprise.
Yeah, I'm not going to go with the chalk. I guess I'm a true believer in Miami. I think the defense will be improved. They can't be any worse than they were last year. In Carson Beck, I trust. And I'm just going to take Miami on this one. And my surprise team is Georgia Tech. I think they're a tough team to play. That guy does a good job. He's the kind of coach who puts together a team that nobody wants to play. So I think Georgia Tech is a team that can come out of nowhere and make some more noise again.
I like both ends of that. I do. I understand Clemson's the favorite and should be the favorite, but I also look at the team last year. They got housed by every good team they played except for SMU in the championship game. So yes, everybody's back, but are they good enough? So I'm going to roll with Miami as well there. I'm taking the Canes. I think it's a breakthrough time for them. And then for my surprise team, give me the hoodie. Give me Bill Belichick in North Carolina. I'm not saying they're going to win the league. I'm saying they're going to win more games than they have and more than people expect, because I think he is going to coach up what he has to an elite level. All right, Big 12. Gene, what do you got? Champion, surprise team.
Big 12 to me is the most interesting conference in the country because I really don't know who's going to win that league. You can make an argument for, 4 or 5 of them. But I mentioned Utah earlier. I'm going to stick with Utah as the team that comes out on top there for all the reasons that you guys mentioned. And then my surprise team. And I'm doing this because David Booth has spent so much money there. I think he deserves me at least giving them some love. I'm going to pick Kansas as a surprise team there. And not just because of the new stadium and sort of the momentum that they have, but I think they have a good team, and it always starts with the quarterback, and they've got one of those.
Brian.
Well, yeah, and Jalen Daniels healthy this season coming into the year. Like that, I think that's going to be a big factor there for Kansas. I will go to the default again with Arizona State. I mean, that pretty much every starter is returning outside of Cam Scatabo, and they really like the transfer they got from Army there in the backfield. So, I think Arizona State, they won a lot of close games last year, and for a team that is returning that did play in a lot of those close games, being able to know how to navigate that in the fourth quarter, I think Kenny Dillingham, one of the best young coaches the game right now, I think he gets Arizona State at least back to Dallas there to get to the Big 12 title game. I like the Utah pick, but I will say keep an eye out for Baylor. Sawyer Robertson, he played really well down the stretch. That team had a lot of momentum outside of the bowl game that they finished the year strong. I would look at Baylor especially if they can get over that non-conference schedule, which is absolutely brutal in the first month of the season. that they got a chance to really go on a road in the Big 12 and make some noise.
I'm taking ASU as well. I believe Kenny Dillingham is one of the next great coaches, and once you get that program up off the ground, he's going to keep it off the ground. I love Sam Levitt. I like the returning experience on defense. I love Jordan Tyson. Give me the Sun Devils. And then for the breakthrough, everybody's a surprise team in this league, right? I'm going with Texas Tech. Let's see it, man. They've spent $9 gazillion on this roster. It's time to come through. You want a coach that's probably going to be on the hot seat a little bit? I mean, they just have to come through. Is Joey McGuire there? They have spent the money, and they will spend it to buy him out if they don't compete for the Big 12 championship. All right, Big 10, winner and surprise team, Brian.
Give me Penn State. Obviously, the Nittany Lions. I mean, talk about bringing everybody back, having the schedule where really there's only maybe two games that you can kind of question mark, and obviously they get one of those, Oregon at home, for a night whiteout. So I think you can probably mark that down as a W, especially with a young quarterback for the Ducks there. But I think Penn State's the favorite at this point. I know we got to get over our bias against James Franklin and Big Game James and the issues that he has beating top five teams, but having the quarterback back, having those that tailbacks back, I mean, a soft non-conference schedule that is basically a preseason for them. You know, I think they upgraded significantly there at the wide receiver core. Yes, they're all American tight end. I think that's tough, but at the end of the day, I think this is Penn State league to lose at this point. Surprise, you know, Gene mentioned them a couple times. You know, maybe it's USC. You know, they probably could have had a lot better year if they could close things out in the fourth quarter. Maybe this is the year that Lincoln Riley gets them over the hump. They've got a manageable schedule, I think, by Big Ten standards. Not as many cross-country trips outside of that trip to South Bend in the non-conference. So like maybe it's USC that does end up surprising people, because we know the talent is there. The defense has improved significantly. I think Eric Gentry, if he's healthy for a full season, can make a big difference in the middle of that defense for USC.
Gene,
what's the number? 1-15 against top five teams, James Franklin. Every fiber in my body says, don't do it. Don't fall for it. He's going to break your heart again, and I'm sure there are a lot of Penn State fans who are kind of feeling the same way, but you simply can't ignore the strength of that depth chart, those starters, that experience, that quarterback, those running backs. Keep on going down. They got the best guy in the transfer portal, Jim Knowles, as a defensive coordinator. Yeah. So I just can't ignore it. I want to. I truly can't believe. But in this case, there's just too many things in Penn State's favor for me not to pick them to win the Big Ten. And then I've made my case for USC. You guys have backed it up. So I'll just say USC is my surprise team.
God help us. We're all picking Penn State.
Oh, boy.
We are absolutely careening off the cliff here with the Nittany Lions. Yeah, sorry. Oh, sorry, boy. Penn State. my surprise team, I'm going to take – Washington. I think Damon Williams is a star in the making at quarterback.
It's a good pick.
And they were great at home. They have been for the last several years. That's continued under Jed Fish. And the schedule's pretty advantageous. You get Ohio State in Seattle. You get Illinois in Seattle. You get Oregon in Seattle. Your road trips are manageable in the Big Ten. I'm not saying they're going to win it, but I think they could be on the cusp of really making an impact here in year two in that league. And finally, the SEC just means more. Who's winning it, Gene? Who's making a push?
Can I just mention again that we will be spectacularly wrong on most of these picks?
Oh, yeah.
But,
oh,
okay, 100%. Just as long as everybody knows that. I'm picking Texas. I mentioned Carson Beck, I trust. And Arch Manning, I trust. And in Sarkisian, I trust. And just about everything else about Texas, I trust. I just think this is their time, their year. And yes, you can make a compelling case for Bama. You can make a compelling case for Georgia. And would I be stunned if either two of those teams ended up winning the SEC? Absolutely not. But I'm going with Texas here. And yes, I did mention that Hugh Freeze better win some of those early games or else. But I do think they will win some of those early games, and I think they will be the sort of surprise team of that conference. They've got some of the things that you need to make that jump, and now or never for Auburn. And they've got those seven other national championships, so of course that matters.
The 1910 team certainly deserving of a national championship.
An inspiration,
10 years later.
An inspiration.
Yeah. They claimed a national title when they were on probation. Like that's the hubris.
That's Auburn for you.
That's Auburn. What's probation mean at Auburn? Come on.
Nothing.
Brian, what's your SEC pick?
We'll get into the Auburn folks maybe on another pod. I'll go with Alabama. I will make that case for the Tide. Obviously, Kalen DeBoer, fish out of water in the SEC last year. I think obviously was not prepared kind of for the daily grind. I think they will be much more focused each game this season for going for Alabama. And look, they have the best roster, I think, out of any of those teams in the SEC. I think it's, yes, there are question marks about Ty Simpson at quarterback, but if there's anything you trust, Kalen DeBoer, Ryan Grubb being back there, I think is a big add as OC. I think they will be just fine at quarterback. Plus, you can throw it up to Ryan Williams, and he can make plays. One of the better wide receiving corps, too, there in Alabama. So I will go with the Tide. I think the schedule works out in their favor a little bit as well. But, under the radar team, nobody's really mentioning Texas A&M. You look at what they've brought back. They had the best offense, actually, in the SEC last year with what they were able to do, put up some points. The thing that I really kind of tripped them up, especially down the stretch, was just the defense. And if you trust Mike Elko to do anything, it's get a lot of talented players to be playing a lot better in year two. But I would throw the Aggies out as maybe a little bit of a dark horse there in the SEC.
I'm with everything Gene articulated on Texas. It's their time, and I would also add that the defense is going to be nasty. I mean, they have got elite players on all three levels, and so I expect them to really, really be defense first. But I'm taking them, and previously mentioned Missouri, Schedule City. I think that they can make a push at least into the upper third of the league. All right, who wins the G6, the Group of Six bid to the playoffs? Who gets that coveted spot? It's last year was Boise State. This year, what do you got, Brian?
I'll go with Boise State again. I think they are the default this year. And yes, they do lose Ashton Gentry, but Sire Gaines, I think he's going to be a terrific replacement for him at running back. Got Maddox Baxton back. And look, the schedule is a little bit more difficult this year. I mean, that opener against UCF in Tampa, first week of the season, we know how hot and humid it can get. That's a little trickier than I think expected. But Boise State, easily the class of the Mountain West. I think that's probably the biggest saving grace. You look at those teams in the American, given that they have to play each other, like it's going to be difficult if you're UTSA, if you're Tulane, if you're some of those other schools. I think just schedule-wise, it's going to shape up well for Boise State, even if they maybe lose one or two games. Like they still probably get that Group of Five team. And I will throw Navy out there as, Blake Horvath is back. They've got a manageable schedule. We might have a tricky situation there with the selection committee, given where the Army-Navy game is happening after Selection Sunday. Navy could make a run. I think they have what it takes with what they've got coming back. Saw them make a big step last year. They could be just as good, if not better, this year.
Gene?
Well, our mutual friend Chris Felica is sweet on UTSA. Just throwing that out there for what it's worth. Navy, of course, beautiful season last year, and they could maybe do the same. But I guess I'll go the default position too and pick Boise for all the reasons that Brian said. I'll stick with them for the moment.
We're boring there because I'm going to go Boise as well. Yeah. I would love to make a case for Navy. I love Blake Horvath, the quarterback there. Kind of interested in seeing what Jake Retzlaff can do if he integrates into the offense at Tulane, but that's a tough ask as late as he transferred in from BYU. Mm-hmm. So rolling on the
way too, it's a little bit different with the Green Wave this year because they got two Power Five teams going in to New Orleans there with Duke and Northwestern. So you split one of those two, you could maybe make a good case, but the American this year, I think is going to be a really compelling league to watch because there's a couple of teams at the top that could really not only contend for the conference, but get that G5 bid as well.
All right. Who wins the national championship? Gino, who you have?
I have Texas and Penn State in the national championship, and I'm going to take Texas. And it has nothing to do with James Franklin. So it's not a critique of him in a big game. I think that team is going to make it to the national championship game. I just believe more in Texas. I believe more in the ingenuity of Sark. And you mentioned that defense. I think that defense is going to make it tough for anybody every week. And I know it's old school. I know it's an absolute cliche, but I do believe defense wins championships, especially at that level. And so I'm going to go with the Longhorns.
Brian?
I will go the opposite. I will go Penn State over Texas. How come we're always we're questioning James Franklin? We do not question, I think, Steve Sarkisian as much. I mean, big stage there in the SEC title game. They come up short. A lot of red zone issues there for Texas last year. I think that definitely needs to get cleaned up. I know everybody's focused in on Arch Mania and everything happening there at Texas. But I think Penn State, you know, look, the last two national titles that are won in the Big Ten, what do they do? A lot of returning guys, supplemented through the transfer portal, guys that had came close the year before. I mean, it's checking off every single box there with Penn State. I think with what happened last year, especially in the semifinals, that's going to be their driving factor. Every time Penn State goes up against an overmatched opponent, he's James Franklin's going to bring up that game. He's going to start showing that pass every single team meeting in terms of how that ended there in Miami. And I think they not only get back there to Miami Gardens, but they end up hoisting the trophy as well.
Well, I would be welcoming to a Arch Manning versus Penn State finally trying to win a championship storyline. I'm sure everybody would handle it very calmly if Arch Manning leads Texas to the national championship in his first year as a college starter. Good Lord. I'm going with Penn State for the reasons Brian largely laid out there. I think they have the best team. They just have to get over that hump. Eventually, Phil Mickelson had to go from the best guy to never win a major to winning majors. I think James Franklin is in that point of his career. He's ready to do it. I'm going with the Nits. All right, a couple more things we got to get to here. We're going to do a pick contest, give you guys something to truly mock and laugh at here. We're going to call it Winners and Steak Dinners, the Tired Old Title, Race for the Case, the Wired Title, Winners and Steak Dinners. The winner between the three of us will have a steak dinner paid for him at the national championship. Week zero, we're only picking one game. Kent, can you please roll our intro music for this game?
We love it in the city of A.
Hooray!
We love it in A.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That song's never going away. Count
That's
on it.
That's Pat actually singing it, by the way.
I'm glad you got that in the divorce, Pat.
The tap water in Ames, can't beat it. We all know.
Delicious.
I'm sure they have great tap water in Manhattan, Kansas as well. And that's the game here. Farmageddon in Ireland. Kansas State is giving 3.5 to the Cyclones. Mike Loss from the Cedar Rapids Gazette wrote a great column that, you know, the Big Ten and the SEC have done everything they can to monopolize the season and the sport in general. But on week zero, this is a Big 12 showcase. Farmageddon, Kansas State, Iowa State. Who do you have against the spread? Gene Wojciechowski, 3.5 points.
I think this is going to be a great game, by the way. I don't know. Matt Campbell and Iowa State with 3.5 points. Thank you, sir. May I have another? I mean, I'll take that all day. Give me the 3.5 points. I like the Cyclones.
There we go.
Love that it's farm ogated. You know, it's like they've changed it to suit the locale for this one. You know, I think I will go with Kansas State. I think Avery Johnson makes a big jump this year at quarterback for the Wildcats. I think they just the consistency there in the Little Apple gets the job done over in Ireland. And look, Iowa State, Matt Campbell's teams typically have started slow, especially the last couple of years. I think that kind of gets held against them. I do love Rocco Becht. I love everybody, but give me Kansas State on this one.
I think this is enough of a toss-up that you just give me the team that's getting the points, and especially if it's more than a field goal, I'm rolling with Iowa State there. Hooray. We love it in Ames. All right, last thing. We've got to discuss this from Texas Football Life Twitter account. Hopefully this is accurate. I have no idea. I didn't take the time to look. But they have the most unique course offered at every Texas FCS school, and I want to know which. Oh, wait, actually, we want the FBS list. Let me find that here. Hang on 1 second. I've got FCS, we want FBS because these are even better. Which course, guys, would you rush to take? Where would you enroll just to take this course? I'm going to run through them real quick. Rice, understanding the U.S. through baseball. Texas, arguing the end of the world. North Texas, science, skepticism, and weird behavior. SMU, how to build a time machine. Houston, beer appreciation. Baylor, religion and sport. TCU, Beyonce and intersectionality. UTSA, mariachi ensemble. Texas A&M, Texas barbecue. Texas State, from Jay-Z to Kendrick Lamar, politics, power, and the identity in hip-hop literature. Texas Tech, the zombie in media and popular culture. What's the Sam Houston podcasting? Let's see if they can do better than us. They probably can.
Probably, yes.
Yeah. And UTEP, regional Mexican music. All right, guys, what do you most want to take out of that? Give me one, Gene.
You know, barbecue has a lot of appeal to me, but arguing the end of the world, but only if REM and the Minister of Culture, Matthew McConaughey, they're the instructors on the class. Then I'm all in on arguing the end of the world.
I would sign up for that.
Yeah.
Brian.
You know, college is all about learning. So I'm definitely going to go with the Texas barbecue there in College Station. That class, I think that could pay off. You know, if you know the science behind how you make sure that marinade gets into those ribs. And I know, Pat, you're a big green egg guy. Like, you know, knowing that temperatures and all the settings that you need to really produce some good Texas barbecue. Plus, like the field trips on that class, especially there around College Station, where you can get up to Lockhart and some of those other places. I think I would definitely go with that class. Although, close call with beer appreciation there at Houston.
Yeah, there's many fine choices here, and I like both of you guys there. I am very tempted to go with the zombie in media and popular culture. I want to see the other people that are taking that class. Maybe I don't.
Maybe not.
But look, I got to be on brand. I got to be true to myself. I am taking beer appreciation at Houston and enjoying that classwork immensely and the field trips therein. So, all right, that's our podcast. That's our show. Look for us wherever you can find podcasts, Spotify, where else? Oh, Apple. Look for the video on YouTube, etc. Thanks for listening. We'll try to do better next show, and we'll see you next week.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Save big money on everything for your next bathroom project. Now at Menards. Upgrade your bathroom with Max. With more than 1,000 showers, bathtubs, and surrounds, you're sure to find exactly what you need to add luxury and style to your bathroom. Save big on our entire selection of Max bathroom products. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save